everybody. My name is Beth, and I'm an alcoholic. And y'all are stuck with me tonight because Anne Marie has kids, and Cass was not feeling well. So I'm chipping in for them because they're my sisters. And let's face it, I'd be dead without them. So here I am. Tonight we're going to be covering two employers, which is chapter 10 that starts on page 136. I'm not one for going line by line, but we're going to go line by line because I have the sinking suspicion that if we don't do it in this meeting, it will not get done ever. So many people skip the forgotten chapters, and it's really sad. There's a lot in here. And my understanding of the 12th step is that working with others is the first half of the second, is the first half of the 12th step. All of the forgotten chapters are the second half of the 12th step, which is practice these principles in all our affairs. All our affairs. So my name is Beth. Did I say my name is Beth? I'm an alcoholic. Oh, thank God. And my day of grace is August 22nd, 1991. And I didn't have anything to do with that. God was like, you're done. I wandered around the ruins of Alcoholics Anonymous for 6.5 years, unable and probably unwilling to do this work. So it's only by the grace of God that I'm sober. It's only by the grace of God any of us are sober. If you buy into the 12-step model, we read it every day and or every meeting and how it works, that we placed ourselves beyond human aid. So there's that. So I got married in recovery. I had kids in recovery. I now have adolescents in recovery. I wish they were in recovery. I went through this work at 6.5 years sober, and since then I have never had to start over ever again. And I think that that's the biggest accomplishment for me personally. My MO when I was drinking was that I would just leave and go start over somewhere else. I'd get a new job. I'd move. I'd move every 3 to 6 months, my first 4 years in recovery, because I couldn't manage relationships, right? And come to find out, I sit down with my sponsor going through this work the first time, and she's like, recovery is all about relationships. And I was like, well, then I'm doomed. So to this day, a lot of the principles I carry into all of my relationships come from the forgotten chapter. So I'm really glad that we get to do this together. I have a drawer full of big books at this point, and I reached in and wasn't looking and grabbed this one. This one was the one that I started. I had every 4 or 5 years, I buy a new big book, and this one's from 1999, so God only knows what it says. So we're going to get moving, if that's okay. So, chapter 10, two employers. I also want to preface by saying, because I love to hear myself talk, two employers for me very much models how I sponsor and how I deal with people that relapse in this program. I'm that person in a meeting that if you openly judge somebody for relapsing, I will publicly shame you. Because if I'm beyond human aid, it means that I don't choose to stop drinking. So when we shame people out of AA, you get to deal with me. And I'm kind of a jerk. No, I'm definitely a jerk. Anyway. All right. Step 10, two employers. Among many employers nowadays, we think of one member who has spent... This is very loud. Let's see. One member who has spent much of his life in the world of big business... he has hired and fired hundreds of men. He knows that the alcoholic as the employer sees him. And this chapter was written by Hank P. His present views ought to prove exceptionally useful to businessmen everywhere. But let him tell you. I was at one time assistant manager of a corporation department employing 6,600 men. Jesus. One day, my secretary came in saying that Mr. B insisted on speaking with me. I told her to say that I was not interested. I had warned him several times that he had but one more chance. Not long afterward, he called me from Hartford on two successive days, so drunk he could hardly speak. I told him he was through, finally and forever. My secretary returned to say it was not Mr. B on the phone. It was Mr. B's brother, and he had wished to give me a message. I still expected a plea for clemency, but these words came through the receiver. I just wanted to tell you, Paul jumped from a hotel window in Hartford last Saturday. He left a note saying you were the best boss he had ever had and that you were not to blame in any way. This is what happens to us when we don't understand, when we're not afforded the opportunity to stop, to find something that's going to help us get free of this. This is our end. This is what happens to us. We either die of liver failure, not to talk about outside issues, but in the grand scheme of the landscape in our culture, you can go out and use one time and you're dead. So this is the totality of alcoholism and the other stuff we like to put in our body in between alcohol. This is very, very real. Another time, as I opened a letter which lay on my desk, a newspaper clipping fell out. It was the obituary of one of the best salesmen I ever had. After 2 weeks of drinking, he had placed his toe on the trigger of a loaded shotgun. The barrel was in his mouth. I had discharged him for drinking 6 weeks before. Still another experience, a woman's voice faintly over long distance from Virginia. She wanted to know if her husband's company insurance was still in force. 4 days before, he had hanged himself in his woodshed. I had been obliged to discharge him for drinking. Though he was brilliant, alert, and one of the best organizers I have ever known. Here were three exceptional men lost to this world because I did not understand alcoholism as I do now. What irony, I became an alcoholic myself. And but for the intervention of an understanding person, I might have followed in their footsteps. My downfall cost the business community unknown thousands of dollars, for it takes real money to train a man for an executive position. This kind of waste goes unabated. We think the business fabric is shot through with a situation which might be helped by a better understanding all around. And I know, I if anybody's ever heard me speak, I probably sound like a broken record when I talk about being beyond human aid, when I talk about non-judgment of others, when I talk about the room, the highway being all roomy, inclusive, never exclusive, that we let anybody into these rooms that wishes to hear a message. And the reason that I sound like a broken record is because I need as many people to be educated about what we're supposed to be doing here as possible. I have seen so many people shamed out of AA, opinioned out of AA, ostracized in AA. I've seen people that are intoxicated, drunk, off their gourd, come into a room of AA and get kicked out. Where else do they belong? I mean, if he's throwing chairs, it's probably a good idea to get him to a hospital. But anytime we become angry or judge another alcoholic, we're completely negating everything this program is based on. And so this is why I sound like a broken record. Because anytime I am disturbed with a person in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am negating God's will. Oh, why we don't give up when they drink. That's what I wrote next to that paragraph. Nearly every modern employer feels a moral responsibility for the well-being of his health, and he tries to meet these responsibilities that he has not always done so for the alcoholic easily understood. To him, the alcoholic has often seemed a fool of the first magnitude. Because of the employee's special ability, or of his own strong personal attachment to him, the employer has sometimes kept such a man at work long beyond a reasonable period. Some employers have tried every known remedy. His chronic relapsers, right? If only in a few instances has there been a lack of patience and tolerance, and we who have imposed on the best of employers can scarcely blame them if they have been short with us. Here, for instance, is a typical example. An officer of one of the largest banking institutions in America knows I no longer drink. One day he told me about an executive of the same bank who, from his description, was undoubtedly alcoholic. This seemed to be, to me, like an opportunity to be helpful. So I spent 2 hours talking about alcoholism, the malady, and described the symptoms and results as well as I could. His comment was, "Very interesting. But I'm sure this man is done drinking. He has just returned from a 3-month leave of absence. He has taken a cure, looks fine, and to clinch the matter, the board of directors told him this was his last chance." The only answer I could make was that if the man followed the usual pattern, he would go on a bigger bust than ever. I felt this was inevitable and wondered if the bank was doing the man an injustice. Why not bring him into contact with some of our alcoholic crowd? He might have a chance. I pointed out that I had had nothing to drink whatever for 3 years, and this in the face of difficulties that would have made 9 out of 10 men drink their heads off. Why not at least afford him the opportunity to hear my story? "Oh no," said my friend, "this chap is either through with liquor or he's minus a job. If he has your willpower and guts, he will make the grade." I wanted to throw my hands up in discouragement, for I saw that I had failed to help my banker friend understand. I think this is also something that when we alcoholics really start to get a grasp on what this process is supposed to be about and what our lives are supposed to become, there's a general frustration with the outside population that congratulates you on the amount of time you've been sober, or you're doing such a good job. Like, you know, it's a good thing that you quit. You have such control over things now. You've become such an amazing person. I personally get very frustrated with the ignorance about what alcoholism really is. But it's something that we have to contend with every single day. I personally work in a field where I come across people who are treating mental health illnesses and have no understanding of alcoholism. So my frustration runs a little bit deeper in the fact that I run into many mental health professionals that think we should all just quit drinking and everything will be normal. That's funny. I'm going to continue. He simply could not believe that his brother executive suffered from a serious illness. There was nothing to do but wait. Presently, the man did slip and was fired. Following his discharge, we contacted him. Without much ado, he accepted the principles and procedure that had helped us, right? So the first 164 pages. He is undoubtedly on the road to recovery. To me, the incident illustrates lack of understanding as to what really ails the alcoholic and lack of knowledge as to what part employers might profitably take in salvaging their sick employees. If you desire to help, if you desire to help, it might be well to disregard your own drinking or lack of it. Whether you are a hard drinker, a moderate drinker, or a teetotaler, you may have some pretty strong opinions, perhaps prejudices. Those who drink moderately may have more may be more annoyed with an alcoholic than a total abstainer would be. Drinking occasionally and understanding your own reactions, it is possible for you to become quite sure of many things which, so far as the alcoholic is concerned, are not always so. And I really challenge everybody that's actually listening to this to put yourself in those shoes in these rooms. The longer we stay away from a drink, the harder it can be to tap back into what it was like to come in here and have no clue what was going on. Have no clue that there was an answer right around the corner. Have no idea, if you just take these simple actions, that you're going to feel the way I feel right now. We forget that. We forget. Like, I'll never forget the time I agreed to sponsor this girl, and you know, she asked me to sponsor after the meeting, and you know, I said, great, she come to my house. She came to my house. I started reading the big book, and she goes, who's Bill W.? There was a day where I didn't know who Bill W. was. I remember when I was in aftercare, well, it was IOP, I called it aftercare, I don't know why, but I was 16 years old, and they used to talk about this place called the Pyramid Club, and everybody would go to meetings there. And in my mind's eye, I will never forget this, it was like a dance club with pink flamingos. Don't ask me where that came from, I was very drunk. So we have to remember, those of us that have had the opportunity to understand and have an experience in this program, it is our continued responsibility to bring that opportunity to anybody that shows up. No, we don't shove it down their throat. In fact, I usually run and hide from as many people as humanly possible. But when people show up, they're not showing up because they know what's going on. They're not here because they're well, and they're fighting for their lives just like we were. As a moderate drinker, you can take the liquor or leave it alone, which is what we can do right now. Whenever you want to, you control your drinking. We can't do that. Of an evening, you can go on a mild bender, get up the next morning, shake your head, and go to business. To you, liquor is no real problem. You cannot see why it should be for anybody else, save the spineless and stupid. And I have met a lot of people that look at newcomers like they're stupid. And it blows my mind. When dealing with an alcoholic, there may be natural annoyance that a man could be so weak, stupid, or irresponsible. Even when you understand the malady better, you may feel this feeling rising. A look at the alcoholic in your organization is many times illuminating. Is he not usually brilliant, fast-thinking, imaginative, and likable? When sober, does he not work hard and have a knack of getting things done? If he had these qualities and did not drink, would he be worth retaining? Should we have the same consideration as other ailing employees? Is he worth salvaging? If your decision is yes, whether the reason be humanitarian or business or both, then the following suggestions may be helpful. This paragraph, when I get frustrated with newcomers, and also if I've been sponsoring somebody that drank and is coming back and wants to continue, I need to read this paragraph in true humility and ask myself these questions, and the answer has not always been yes. Because if I go back into a sponsorship relationship with somebody that I am blocked for whatever reason with, I am not being of service to them, and I am harming them. Can you discard the feeling that you are dealing only with habit, with stubbornness, or weak will? If this presents difficulty, rereading chapters 2 and 3, where the alcoholic sickness is discussed at length, might be worthwhile. You as a businessman want to know the necessities before considering the result. If you concede that your employee is ill, can he be forgiven for what he has done in the past? Can his past absurdities be forgotten? Can it be appreciated that he has been a victim of crooked thinking directly caused by the action of alcohol on his brain? These are all questions that I asked myself. I remember AA World Service, I think it was World Service in Manhattan, had their treasury stolen, and no charges were brought. Like, it blew my mind. At the time, this was years and years and years ago, at the time, I was like, we need to hold him accountable, and you can't do that. Like, I was pissed. I don't know why. It was not like it was my money. But now looking back at it, that is the stance of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, is that we're sick people, we're not here because we're well, and when we act like alcoholics, it's kind of expected. If I'm not acting like the miracle I get to be today, then I'm acting the way that my core dictates I act when I'm sick and shut off from the sunlight of the spirit. I well remember the shock I received when a prominent doctor in Chicago told me the case where pressure of the spinal fluid actually ruptured the brain. No wonder an alcoholic is strangely irrational. Who wouldn't be with such fevered brain? Normally drinkers are not so affected, nor can they understand the aberrations of the alcoholic. Your man has probably been trying to conceal a number of scrapes, perhaps pretty messy ones. They may be disgusting. You may be at a loss to understand how such a seemingly above-board chap could be so involved. But these scrapes can generally be charged, no matter how bad, to the abnormal action of alcohol on the mind. When drinking or getting over a bout, an alcoholic, sometimes the model of honesty when normal, will do incredible things. Afterwards, his revolution will be terrible. Nearly always, these antics indicate nothing more than temporary conditions. This is not to say that all alcoholics are honest and upright when not drinking. Of course, that isn't so, and such people may often impose on you. Seeing your attempt to understand and help, some men will try to take advantage of your kindness. If you are sure your man does not want to stop, he may as well be discharged, the sooner the better. You are not doing him a favor by keeping him on. Firing such an individual may prove a blessing to him. It may be just the jolt he needs. So I was about a year and a half sober, and I asked Kathy to sponsor me, and she said yes, and then I just went about my business. I didn't know what a sponsor was for, just as long as I had one. And I remember she came up to me. I don't know how long she'd been sponsoring me. She came up to me, and she said, maybe I was like four years sober, who knows. So I remember she came up to me at the Saturday Night Sparta meeting, and she said, Beth, I love you very much, but I'm not going to be working with you as a sponsor anymore. You're using me in name only, and that's not going to help you recover from alcoholism. I remember very little of anything in my life. I don't remember where events happened, how they happened, but I literally remember where I was standing in the gym in Sparta, New Jersey, about probably 10 to 8 before the meeting, and a Kathy with a bowl cut blonde hair. And, you know, I remember being told that. And even more interesting to me is I remember how I felt. And where it says it may be just the jolt he needs, I felt that jolt in that minute. I knew that I was now alone in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it did light somewhat of a fire under my butt, the best it could without actually going through the work. But this is why this whole chapter to me relates also to sponsorship. Anyway, I know in my own particular case that nothing my company could have done would have stopped me. For so long as I was able to hold my position, I could not possibly realize how serious my situation was. Had they fired me first And had they then taken steps to see that I was presented with a solution contained in this book, I might have returned to them six months later a well man. But there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go far. Your understanding, treatment of their cases will pay dividends. Perhaps you have such a man in mind. He wants to quit drinking, and you want to help him, even if it's only a matter of good business. You now know more about alcoholism. You can see that there is mentally and they are mentally and physically sick. You are willing to overlook his past performances. Suppose an approach is made something like this. And this is the conversation I have with girls that have relapsed while I'm sponsoring them. State that you know about his drinking and that it must stop. You might say you appreciate his abilities, would like to keep him, but cannot if he continues to drink. A firm attitude at this point will help many of us. Has helped many of us. Next, you can be assured that he can be assured that you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn. That if this was done formally, it was because of misunderstanding. If possible, express a lack of hard feelings toward him. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, the illness. Say that you believe he is a gravely ill person, with this qualification being perhaps fatally ill, does he want to get well? You ask because many alcoholics, being warped and drugged, do not want to quit, but does he? Will he take every necessary step, submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever? If he says yes, does he really mean it, or down inside does he think he is fooling you? And that after rest and treatment, he will be able to get away with a few drinks now and then. We believe a man should be thoroughly probed on these points. Be satisfied he is not deceiving himself or you. That's our job as sponsors, right? Our job as sponsors, in my opinion, and the way that I sponsor women, is that I'm a mirror for you. My job is to lay out the instructions as they are in this book and to experience and to watch you have your own personal experience with this work. But it is also my job to call you to task when I see things that are going to get in your way. You can continue to let them get in your way. I can't stop you from living your life, and I have no desire to. But I feel that it is my responsibility to say, I've seen people do this before, and this is what the result was. I've been around for this amount of time, and this is what my experience is. Are you sure this is a path you want to travel? Are you willing to pay the consequences of whatever actions you're about to take? And if they say yes, let them go. Whether you mention this book is a matter for your discretion. If he temporizes and still thinks he can drink again, even beer, he might as well be discharged after the next bender, which if an alcoholic will, he is almost certain to have. He should understand that emphatically. Either you're dealing with a man who can and will get well, or you're not. If not, why waste time on him? This may seem severe, but it's usually the best course. And I know that for somewhat earlier in the book, because I don't remember anything is, it actually talks about, and we've actually had lengthy conversations, that when we take people through this book and they're not ready to get sober, we may be ruining a fresh opportunity when he is ready, or when she is ready, right? So, you know, when we have these situations and they come up all the time, we tell people, keep coming to the meetings. You know, keep coming, and when you're ready, I'd be happy to take you through the work. If you're not ready, keep coming to the meetings, and let's stay in touch. No judgment, no forcing, no hierarchy, just a genuine desire to give information so that you can have your own experience. After satisfying yourself that your man wants to recover and that he will go to any extreme to do so, you may suggest a definite course of action. For most alcoholics who are drinking or who are just getting over a spree, A certain amount of physical treatment is desirable, even imperative. The matter of physical treatment should, of course, be referred to your own doctor. Whatever the method, its objective is to thoroughly clear the mind of the effects of alcohol. And I'm sure everybody in here knows this, but there is a chance if you've been drinking hard enough and long enough that on day 5 to 7, you can have a grand mal seizure. So yes, going to a doctor and seeing if you need detox should be done. In competent hands, this seldom takes long, nor is it very expensive. That's not true. Your man will fare better if placed in such physical condition that he can think straight and no longer craves liquor. If you propose such a procedure to him, it may be necessary to advance the cost of treatment, but we believe it should be made plain that any expense will later be deducted from his pay. It is better for him to feel fully responsible. And like, this can go to so many situations in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, they've done studies on college students. They do better when they pay for part of their own education or they pay for the whole thing. We take responsibility for our lives when we pay for our life. We are not here to be taken advantage of. We are not here to take advantage of. So when people, right? My sponsor always told me, if you give another human being money, consider it a donation. Consider it a gift. Never demand repayment. If I don't feel like I can separate myself from whatever amount of money it is because I need to have it back, I am not in a place that I can loan money, and it's really just my pride of wanting to look like the good guy, right? So we need to be fully responsible for our recovery. And in fact, I have told sponsees that if your parents paid the deductible or paid the copay out-of-pocket cost for you to go to rehab, you need to pay them back. You're lucky you're even on their insurance. So I am 100% on board for paying our own way. If your man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. Though you are providing him with the best possible medical attention, he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. We all had to place recovery above everything, for without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. And it talks about that in, might be the family afterward. I think it talks about when dad comes home, he takes one of two directions. He either goes headlong into the spiritual aspect of AA, or he goes headlong into making amends and making more money to help the family get back on their feet. Neither one is right and neither one is wrong, but it's always about that balance, right? Just like anything in this world, we as a population suck at balance. We suck at moderation. It's more is better. I'm sober a long time, and I literally said more is better like 3 days ago. Can you have every confidence in his ability to recover? Well, on the subject of confidence, can you adopt the attitude that so far as you are concerned, this will be strictly, oh my God, personal matter? That his alcoholic derelictions, the treatment about to be undertaken, will never be discussed without his consent. Another 100% rule that we all need to take responsibility for, even if we're not sponsoring, is that a conversation that is had between two people stays between those two people unless you have permission. We share the deepest and most vulnerable parts of ourselves with the people in these rooms, and it needs to remain there. It needs to remain with the person I shared it with. I've connected, so let's say somebody's in a DV situation and they call me. I know like a bunch of women in AA that have been in DV situations and have come out the other side, but it's not my story to tell. So what I say to the new person is, listen, I know some women that have had DV situations. Is it okay if I give them your phone number? If you're not comfortable with that, let me talk to them and see if the three of us can sit down for coffee. That's how these situations get handled. Your story is not my story. Your experience is not my experience. Therefore, I have no right to share it. I carry this principle in every area of my life. Every area. It's a little hard with kids, but we manage. The return to the subject matter of this book, it contains full suggestions by which the employee will solve his problem. To you, some of the ideas which it contains are novel. Perhaps you are not quite in sympathy with the approach we suggest. By no means do we offer it as a last word on the subject, but so far as we are concerned, it has worked with us. After all, we are not looking for results. Are you not looking for results rather than methods? Whether your employee likes it or not, he will learn the grim truth about alcoholism. That won't hurt him a bit, even though he does not go for this remedy. We suggest you draw the book to the attention of the doctor who is to attend your patient during treatment. If the book is read, the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, realization of his condition may come to him. We love to manipulate people in detox. Like, it's, if you read Working with Others, like, I remember going through it with my sponsor. I'm like, dude, that's rank manipulation. And she's like, yeah, it is. I think it's hilarious. We hope the doctor will tell the patient the truth about his condition, whatever that happens to be. When the man is presented with this volume, it is best that no one tell him he must abide by its suggestions. The man must decide for himself. You are betting, of course, that your changed attitude plus the contents of this book will turn the trick. In some cases it will, in others it may not. But we think that if you persevere, the percentage of successes will gratify you. As our work spreads and our numbers increase, we hope your employees may be put in a personal contact with some of us. Meanwhile, we are sure a great deal can be accomplished by the use of this book alone. On your employee's return, talk with him. Ask him if he thinks he has the answer. If he feels free to discuss his problems with you, if he knows you understand and will not be upset by anything he wishes to say, he will probably be off to a fast start. Sorry, just checking the time. In his connection, can he remain undisturbed if the man proceeds to tell you shocking things? He may, for example, reveal that he has padded his expense account, that he has planned to take your best customers away from you. In fact, he may say almost anything if he has accepted our solution, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. Can you charge this off as you would a bad account start fresh with him? If he owes you money, you may wish to make terms. If he speaks of his home situation, you can undoubtedly make helpful suggestions. Can he talk frankly with you so long as he does not bear witness tales or criticize his associates? With this kind of employee, such an attitude will command undying loyalty. The greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. Wherever men are gathered together in business, there will be rivalries, and arising out of these a certain amount of office politics. Sometimes we alcoholics have an idea of what people are trying to pull us down. Often, this is not so at all, but sometimes our drinking will be used politically. One instance comes to mind in which malicious individual was always making friendly little jokes about the alcoholic's drinking exploits. In this way, he was slyly carrying tales, gossip. In another case, an alcoholic was sent to a hospital for treatment. Only a few knew of it at first, but within a short time, it was billboarded throughout the entire company. Naturally, this sort of thing decreased the man's chances for recovery. The employer can many times protect the victim from this kind of talk. The employer cannot play favorites, but he can always defend a man who from needless provocation and unfair criticism. And I am definitely the person that will stand up when I hear gossip, especially about another member of AA. We love talking about each other. We love talking about everything. It's really sad. As a class, alcoholics are energetic people. They work hard and they play hard. Your man should be on his mettle to make good. Being somewhat weakened and faced with physical and mental readjustment to a life which knows no alcohol, he may overdo. You may have to curb his desire to work 16 hours a day. You may need to encourage him to play once in a while. He may wish to do a lot for other alcoholics, and something of a sort may come up during business hours. A reasonable amount of latitude will be helpful. This work is necessary to maintain his sobriety. After your man has gone along without drinking for a few months, you may be able to make use of his services with other employees who are giving you the alcoholic runaround, provided, of course, they are willing to have a third party in the picture. This is talking about, like, introducing somebody and sponsoring another. And it says a few months. I don't know. That just goes, for me, that just goes back to all of the adjectives, like launch, next, you know what I mean, that are in the first steps, in all the steps, that this isn't something that we sit around and wait for a year to do. Anyway, an alcoholic who has recovered but holds a relatively unimportant job, that's me, can talk to a man with a better position. Being on a radically different basis of life, he will never take advantage of the situation. Your man may be trusted. I don't know about you, but I remember the first time an employer trusted me. I remember the first time my father trusted me. These things stick in my core. Long experience with alcoholic excuses naturally arouse suspicion. When his wife next calls saying he is sick, you might jump to the conclusion he is drunk. If he is and is still trying to recover, he will tell you about it even if it means the loss of his job, for he knows he must be honest if he would live at all. He will appreciate knowing that you are not bothering your head about him. How many more pages? This is ever. Oh my god, I don't think we're going to make it through. Well, maybe. I'm going to read super fast. Let's see if we can do it. Where was I? Huh? Yeah. head about him that you are not suspicious, nor are you trying to ruin his life. We all think that. So he will be shielded from temptation to drink. If he is conscientiously following the program of recovery, he can go anywhere your business may call him. In case he does stumble, even once, you will have to decide whether to let him go. If you are sure he doesn't mean business, there is no doubt you should discharge him. If, on the contrary, you are sure he is doing his utmost, you may wish to give him another chance. But you should feel under no obligation to keep him on, for your obligation has been well discharged already. There is another thing you might wish to do. If your organization is a large one, your junior executives might be provided with this book. You might let them know that you have no quarrel with the alcoholics of your organization. These juniors are often in a difficult position. Men under them are frequently their friends. So for one reason or another, they cover these men, hoping matters will take a turn for the better. They often jeopardize their own positions by trying to help serious drinkers who should have been fired long ago or else given an opportunity to get well. I don't know about you guys, but like every woman I've ever sponsored and all my friends, they have like this one friend. All of us have this one friend from the time we were little that's like super normal. I don't know if anybody has that in their life. Like that one friend that like keeps sticking around when everybody else has kind of like ditched us out. Like my friend, her name is Lori. We met when we were 8. We're still friends. She just became a grandmother. Holy freaking crap. But it's like we have these one person. This is what this paragraph kind of reminds me of. And then again, and it brings up this fierce responsibility of the amends I owe these people. These people that continuously stood up for me and said were my biggest cheerleaders, not understanding the disease of alcoholism, and took the consequences so many times for us. Those are a major amends that need to be made. After reading this book, a junior executive can go to such a man and say approximately this: "Look here, Ed, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me in a spot every time you get drunk. It isn't fair to me or the firm. I have been learning something about alcoholism. If you're an alcoholic, you are a mighty sick man. You act like one." I love that line. "You act like one. The firm wants you to get over it, and if you're interested, there's a way out. If you take it, your past will be forgotten, and that fact, and the fact that you went away for treatment will not be mentioned. But if you cannot or will not stop drinking, I think you ought to resign." You know, it's really funny. I'm sitting here reading this probably for the first time in, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and I literally just hear Gen Z coming out of this book. I feel like we as a community have finally started to learn how to put healthy boundaries. And Bill was trying to teach us how to do this in the 30s. We're all just a little slow. "Your junior executive may not agree with the contents of our book. He need not and often should not show it to his alcoholic prospect. But at least he will understand the problem and will no longer be misled by ordinary promises. He will be able to take a position with such a man, which is entirely fair and square. He will have no further reason for covering up an alcoholic employee. It boils right down to this: no man should be fired just because he's alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. If he cannot or does not want to stop, he should be discharged. The exceptions are few. We think this method of approach will accomplish several things. It will permit the rehabilitation of good men. At the same time, you will feel no reluctance to rid yourself of those who cannot or will not stop. Alcoholism may be causing your organization considerable damage in its waste of time, men, and reputation. We hope our suggestions will help you plug up this sometimes serious leak. We think we are sensible when we urge you to stop this waste and give your worthwhile man a chance. The other day, an approach was made to vice president of a large industrial concern. He remarked, 'I'm mighty glad you guys got over your drinking, but the policy of this company is not to interfere with the habits of our employees. If a man drinks so much his job suffers, we fire him. I do not see how you can be of any help to us, for as you see, we do not have an alcohol problem.'" This same company spends millions for research every year. Their cost of production is figured to a fine decimal point. They have rational recreational facilities. There is company insurance. There's a real interest, both humanitarian and business, in the well-being of employees. But alcoholism, well, they just don't believe they have it. Perhaps this is a typical attitude. We who have collectively seen a great deal of business life, at least from the alcoholic angle, had to smile at this gentleman's sincere opinion. He might be shocked if he knew how much alcoholism is costing his organization a year. The company may harbor many actual or potential alcoholics. We believe that managers of large enterprises often have little idea how to prevent how prevalent the problem is. Even if you feel your organization has no alcoholic problem, it might pay to take another look down the line. You may make some interesting discoveries. That's hilarious. Of course, this chapter refers to alcoholics, sick people, deranged men. What our friend, the vice president, had in mind was the habitual or whoopee drinker. As to them, this policy is undoubtedly sound, but he did not distinguish between such people and the alcoholic. It is not to be expected that an alcoholic employee will receive a disproportionate amount of time and attention. He should not be made a favorite. The right kind of man, the kind who recovers, will not want this sort of thing. He will not pose. Far from it. He will work like the devil and thank you to his dying day. Today I own a little company. There are two alcoholic employees who produce as much as five normal salesmen. But why not? They have a new attitude and they have been saved from a living death. I have enjoyed every moment spent in getting them straightened out. So there's a lot of parallels in here. Oh, look, I have 3 minutes. I don't know if it could just be where I am at personally with my own program. I believe that when we take these steps and we read these chapters, we surround ourselves with people of like mind that are trying to do the same thing, and we actually take action. We don't just sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and share problem du jour, not judging. We have a real possibility to get out there and have an amazing life. And I don't know about you, but I didn't get sober to be miserable. Like, I don't know, man. The last couple of years, my motto is get out there and make a beautiful mess. Because God has your back. We have each other's backs. If you have solid friends in these programs that are doing the same thing, they have your back and you have theirs. We're supposed to be going out into this world as human beings and having experiences. Now, granted, when I first went through the work, these experiences were like going out to dinner without making a scene. Now, I have a full career. I have a family. These are choices. I'm not saying that this is what everybody should do. I don't care what you do with your life, but do something with your life. Get out there. You can be anything. You can do anything. I mean, if you're 70 and you want to be like a, like a, I don't know, gymnastics like superstar, maybe you're shooting the mark a little bit, but go right ahead. I have witnessed so many miracles in so many people in these rooms. I've seen people in their 40s who have completely gone back to school and completely shifted their entire life, got a new career, moved halfway across the country, and have been happy, happy, happy ever since. Like, this could be you. Or you could be like me, who really just wants to fill her entire basement with fabric, an extra sewing machine just in case, and no people, and lots of books, lots of audiobooks. Like, this is a dream come true to me. I just have to get rid of my kids. It's going to be amazing. Please never underestimate your ability to be free. This is a book that is conditional. This is our conditional program. If you do this, you will get this. Half measures will avail you nothing. If you have a genuine experience of your own with this work, you will be blown away. Because the reality, right, spiritual law is every decision and choice you make creates the reality that you live in. When we clear away the wreckage of our past, when we connect to a power greater than ourselves, when we learn how to exist in the moment, we start making conscious choices that we want to make. It ultimately creates a life that you get to live in. I do not feel forced to do anything in my life anymore, except maybe get up on Monday mornings. I get to show up. I get to figure out adolescence very slowly. I get to be married to my husband. He gets to have this whole shift in his late 40s where he's just like this whole new person. And I'm like, hey, what's up? My name's Beth. And it's amazing. And every single one of us is afforded that opportunity within these pages. And that's all I have to share. Thanks.